Welcome. You're listening to Latin Waves with your hosts, Sylvia and Stuart Richardson. Latin Waves is a syndicated show produced in the studios of CJSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. Latin Waves is more than just hot rhythms. This is a show about community, about creating a culture that is inclusive and based on fairness. Because everyone deserves dignity, respect, and has something to contribute. A new world is possible, and it all starts with us.
That's what's exciting me, is this new way of operating and working with each other, which I think is very feminist, and comes out of the ideas that we had in the second wave of feminism, but that we were never fully able to put into practice.
That's the voice of Canadian author and activist Judy Rebick. On this week's show, we speak to Judy about the Occupy movement from a feminist perspective. Stay tuned.
Someone who has inspired me along this journey is my next guest. Judy Rebick is an amazing author, professor. She's written many books. Her latest book is called Transforming Power, and I'm very privileged to have her on our program. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, Sylvia.
Now, when we think about where we are today, we are celebrating the International Day of Human Rights today. It seems ironic that we have to declare one day where we talk about human rights. And I wonder if you could start maybe by talking a little bit about the significance of having one day. It seems to me almost like a token rather than an action plan to eradicate inequity and injustice.
Well, I don't know. You know, these days we have for everything. We have International Women's Day, International Human Rights Day, International Day for the Elimination of This and the Elimination of That. I think mostly it's the UN that does this, and I'm not a big fan. I mean, International Women's Day is different because we established that ourselves. And so, that is, women in struggle established that day, and it's always about women in struggles, whereas International Human Rights Day seems to have a much more symbolic meaning. I think it's a UN declared day, and it's not as bad as Mother's Day. It's not a Hallmark card day, but it's, it allows for a time when you can have conferences and so on human rights. I'm not a big fan of these things.
I wanted to ask about the way in which, our own institutions are maintained by our participation. And as you point out, the United Nations has this days of recognition, but not really any strategy as to how are we going to do away with neoliberalism? How are we going to overcome, the damage that has been caused by mass privatization, deregulation, the impact on the environment? Mm-hmm. Maybe if we could start there, talking a little bit about the way in which we engage, where do you see the spaces for possible transformation?
I'm very interested in the Occupy movement. I think that, it's the first big mass movement we've seen in a very long time, really since the 70s. And I think that it's gaining its ground, and it's providing a new kind of strategy that seems to be evolving very quickly, as things tend to do in this day and age. It's important on many levels. So one level is the obvious one, which is it's identifying capitalism or this stage of capitalism as the problem and assuming a kind of transformational or revolutionary strategy rather than a strategy of making demands on a state, which most Occupy activists consider completely corrupt at this point in time. And so I don't mean corrupt necessarily bought and paid for by the corporate elite. And that's particularly true in the United States, a bit less true in Europe. So I think this, first of all, identification of the system as the problem. And second of all, a new kind of strategy which says the system relies on us to survive. And so, therefore, we have the power to transform it. And we have to do that by organizing and talking to each other. And I think that's actually a very radical notion. The media is constantly saying, oh, what are your demands? What are your demands? Well, there aren't any demands because there's no confidence that the state in its existing form, or anyone who's vying for state power, any party, is capable of solving the problem. Only the people of the world are capable of solving the problem. So I think that Occupy is a really exciting development, and this is where I'm paying all my attention and putting all my energy, is supporting that movement, because I think that while it's a bit weaker in Canada than in other places, because the economic crisis isn't as deep yet in Canada, I think that the approach that they're taking, and I write about this kind of organizing and transforming power, because we saw, you know, I've been able to see in Latin America and in Europe some of the early signs of it. But I think now it's full-blown, starting in Tahrir Square and then Spain and right throughout Europe now, and then, of course, at Wall Street. I think that it's really taking the approach that we need, a very radical approach, and so radical that even a lot of people on the left don't understand its importance yet, I think, or some people on the left anyway.
I'm glad that you brought the Occupy movement, because we were talking about that in class, and many people said, you know, it's terrible how these people are allowed to take public spaces and to just, you know, take our park. And I said, you know, well, it's interesting that you see it. It's how we construct it, you know, our framing, right? Where do we see, who does that public space belong to? We have no problem when, you know, GM or another corporation decides to set up a stage, you know, and they take that space, and it's okay. We have no problem with the way Wall Street has been occupying many of our you know, institutions, and right, dictating what students should be learning and how they should be educated in order to be marketable. But from a woman's perspective, why is the Occupy movement important for us to take notice, and what are the areas that you see need to be addressed?
So first of all, yeah, I agree with you. You know, this framing of the, you know, they can't find anything wrong with the Occupy movement, so they frame it as, oh, you know, they're not clean or they're taking up the parks. You know, how insane is it? You know, if you think about Toronto, for example, there wasn't a single health or safety violation in Occupy Toronto. You know, they're occupying a big public park in November. You know what I mean? So it became an issue that people couldn't walk their dogs, which in fact they can walk their dogs. You know, it's just ridiculous. They just don't want the presence, that's all. And the reporter said to me, well, you know, it's terrible. Look what they've done to the grass. I said, well, how come you're not out making an outcry of what they're doing with the tar sands, not just to grass, but to whole forests and to the air and to the water, right? So when it's industrial exploitation, nobody raises the problem that they're destroying common ground, right? As you say. So I think that's the media framing. I was just reading an interview with Charles Bernstein on Occupy, who's a great poet, an American poet, and he calls it the masked media, which I love, M-A-S-S-E-D, because they're like a pack of dogs, you know. One moves and then all of them move. So that's the first thing. I think this is completely hypocritical and ridiculous. The reason they're taking down the Occupy encampments is because they're a threat. That's the only reason. Now, in terms of women, it's complicated because, in fact, a lot of the Occupy movement was started by young white males who are, I suppose, the readers of Adbusters, who are, you know, very active, much more active in terms of online stuff. And it's been a struggle for women to become heard. I mean, one of the problems, I think, is that the language of equality, because it's a new generation that doesn't come out of the left, doesn't come out of the women's movement, or the anti-racist, anti-oppression movement, they don't have the grammar of equality. So when someone says, well, we need a women's space or we need a people of color committee, the first reaction of a lot of the people there is, well, that's divisive, you know, and then people feel excluded. But in my experience, a lot of that has been worked through the GAs and the committees. And so women are playing a really major role, right, through all the Occupy movements. But when there's a lack of structure, for whatever reason, it's something that makes me crazy. I mean, it's 40 years after the women's movement started, and that young women are still less confident in speaking out than young men. You know, like when it comes to who's going to be in the media tent, who's going to speak to the media, young men are much more confident in doing that in general. You know, this is just me reading. I'm now in touch with a group called Occupy Feminism, which they're trying to bring much more feminist consciousness and more understanding about feminists into the Occupy spaces. So it's a struggle. It's still a struggle, and also for people of color, although that's changed in the States now because they're focused so much on housing right now and on occupying buildings that have been abandoned or moving into apartment buildings where they're going to turn the heat off, and the residents of most of those places are people of color. So it's starting to change in the States, less so in Canada, I think. I think that for women, my view is that, second wave feminists went as far as we could go in terms of putting demands on the state. I mean, if you look at what we achieved in Canada, on legal ground, we have legal equality in the charter, we have free abortion, we have, weak but nevertheless pay equity legislation. What stopped us was the inequality that's systemic in a capitalist system, and particularly in the neoliberal system, which needs underpaid workers, and the increasing gap between rich and poor, which Occupy is really, not just rich and poor, but rich and everyone else, which Occupy has really put its finger on. Well, women are a large part of the poorest of the 99%. And we never achieved, in North America anyway, we never achieved a national child care program, which means women are overburdened with work outside the home and work inside the home. And so Occupy presents a possibility to go the next step in terms of feminism. And that, to me, means really going after the systems of capitalism, patriarchy, and colonialism. I'm someone who does a lot of work in the media, and I can talk about things now since Occupy started that I couldn't talk about before. And that is by, being much more radical. I can be much more radical in mainstream media because these issues have been raised. And I think the women's movement needs that, that we got too focused on demands on the state and funding and stuff like that, and not enough on challenging the system as a whole. So I think this is bringing us to a balance around that. And the other thing is there's a lot of love in these. I don't know what other word to use, but there's just such a positive atmosphere in the encampments and in the general assemblies. I mean, you can see it on all the videos. There's just a kind of joy and loving character to the relationships. And I think that's also really a positive for feminism. And I think it's something that we wanted to have, but maybe didn't achieve.
Your book is called Transforming Power from the Personal to the Political, which I think is essential to understand. Most women and most students are told that education is neutral, that their politics is sort of this dirty word that we're not supposed to touch. And yet, when you look around, everything is part of a political decision, the kind of air we breathe, the water we drink. And when we talk about climate change and the impact that this has, and as you point out, most of those 99%, the most impoverished will be women. Also, the most impacted by climate change are also women. So can you talk a little bit about our own need to not just overcome patriarchy, to make visible the way gender oppression is, just under the surface of all these policies of, that we see imposed in the name of a more prosperous economy, in the name of moving forward and development?
Well, I mean, for one thing, the whole economic system would collapse without women's unpaid labor. That's just very simple, right? Both in terms of caring for children and caring for families, so that the whole system is based on women's unpaid labor. And that's something that we never talk about. One thing I like about Occupy, it's everybody's unpaid labor, but we're doing it for each other. We're not doing it for a system to survive. I think what's important is to link all of the issues today and not focus on one or another. Like to say that it's true that climate change disproportionately affects women, but it's also true that it affects men. It's also true that it affects poor people. It affects people in the global south disproportionately, for sure, and in that it disproportionately affects women. But it really affects all of us. I think one of the powers of Occupy is that it poses issues as impacting all of us. So it's not like I'm going to be an ally to women as a man. I'm going to be an ally to women because, I feel guilty about their equality or I feel I was part of the problem, so now I have to be part of the solution. But rather to understand that the more women become equal, the more my life is enriched as well, and that the systems that are oppressing women are also oppressing me or keeping me limited. So what I really think is powerful about Occupy is the way in which it links all of the issues. And so I think it's good that there's young women organizing inside of Occupy to make more explicit the impact on women and the specific impact on women, but I wouldn't want to see that be the only focus of women in Occupy. I would want to see that as part of the overall and the broader movement, because I think the power here is the interconnection. So, for example, you know, I met the guy who organized Occupy the Hood in New York, and he chose to do was when he went down to Occupy Wall Street, he thought, well, there's not very many people who look like me here. But instead of sort of, you know, making the argument with them, he just went and organized Occupy the Hood so that they were organizing in Brooklyn and Bedford Stuyvesant and South Bronx, and then naturally people came into the movement because it answered a lot of their demands. And when there were more people of color on the site, then the issues of people of color become more and more that are particular to people of color become more and more prominent. So I don't know if I'm being clear, but I think it's the intersection of the issues, I guess, as we'd say in an academic way. It's the intersection of the issues that are powerful in Wall Street. And understanding that we all have to work together and support each other on all of these issues if we're going to move forward, because it's a systemic change we need. And that's why I talk about transforming power in the book, is that one of the main arguments in transforming power is that we have to change ourselves and our relationships to each other as we're changing the world. And Occupy is totally about that. The general assemblies and the committees and the way in which people take time to talk about how the camp is working and how people are taking care of each other and so on, very much acknowledging that we're all taught to behave in a certain way in the society, like you say, in school, to get the best marks, to be competitive, you know, that the way in which we'll do well in our life is if we do better than everybody else. And Occupy's the opposite of that, and saying that the way we do well in life, the way the life we want to lead, is where those of us who maybe are better educated or better at certain things contribute so that everyone who's there, whatever their abilities, is an equal part of society. It's a kind of utopian society in microcosm, in the sense that it's the opposite of a neoliberal society, like these camps are trying to be. Obviously, you know, it's an attempt, but I think it's the best attempt I've ever seen. You know, we've always made attempts to do that, starting from, you know, early consciousness-raising groups, you know, Resurrection Plaza in the civil rights movement. There's always been attempts to create small communities within the big community to show the kind of society we want and to see if we can do it. You know, communes, hippie communes were that as well. But I think this is the most successful, so far anyway, that I've seen. And I think that the idea, the old idea of the left, that we could put demands on the state and transform society that way, I think is not true anymore, which is not to say we shouldn't have demands, particularly around things like climate change. I think we have to have demands, and obviously we have to fight against the regressions, like the crime bill right now, which I think is catastrophic in Canada, and the immigration policies that they're bringing in. We have to fight against those things, but we can't just be stuck in resistance. We also have to be practicing transformative practices ourselves. That's what I argue in Transforming Power, and I think that is what Occupy is trying to do.
And I agree with you. I wasn't making the point that it should be, but I think as women who are engaged in these social movements, we have to be very aware of how throughout history our voices tend to be dismissed, you know, and so you hear the celebration of the victorious, you know, rebellion, and yet the voices of the women seem to be subsumed, right? And they're somewhere in the background. And once we achieve this, then we'll fight for... gender equality.
Yeah.
So
no, I agree with you. You know, I was just talking to Velcro Ripper, and he's just come back from Egypt, and he said to me, it's just amazing the power of the women in Tahrir Square, you know, of all ages. He said they've been able to use a revolutionary moment to really come into their full leadership in a society where they've been really repressed for a long time. And I said, the danger in that, of course, is that in the revolutionary period, they're allowed to come to the fore and permitted, but then once that settles down, they're pushed back into their old roles. And that's been true in many revolutions. And that's why I was worried at first with Occupy, because women weren't playing a central role at the beginning. But I think that's changing. Occupy Women, I think they call themselves, and there's another one called WOW. So there's a number of feminist groups now in organized in Occupy Wall Street, and they're bringing this forward because they're saying people like me or Naomi Klein, women who have a voice, aren't raising the question of women's participation and women's concerns in the Occupy thing, and you know, they think that we should be doing that. So I think that's a fair criticism, that and what you, the point you're raising is a good one, that we can't ever lose that consciousness. And like I say, it's like this new generation doesn't understand it. You know, the men don't seem to understand, you know, the whole question of the importance of and the voice of women's participation and voices, or they're not aware of it. So yeah, so it's a struggle. It's been a struggle, but I think that in North America and Europe, where, you know, we're a bit of ahead of the curve than from revolutions, let's say, in the 50s and 60s, where this happened, because we're already pretty strongly represented throughout the institutions of society. It's not like we're invisible as we once were. So I think it's important for us to ensure there's women's leadership, and it's recognized and it's strong, and that we're bringing up the specific issues that relate to women and making sure there's priorities on them. I agree with that. But I also think that it should be done in a way that's different than it's been done in the past. I think there's an openness to it. That, like, you know, when I was young and when we were in the student movement, we would fight for women's representation, and men would laugh at us. I mean, it was impossible. They were so resistant to it. Whereas now I think there's more openness to it.
I think there are many men who are feminists and who are allies of women who want to achieve equity and who see gender equity as something that will, you know, enrich both our lives. Where I wanted to lead is that as women who have become accustomed to, you know, having these multiple roles of free labor in the home and free labor in the many committees that we serve for free because, you know, that's just what we do. And then in addition to having a job and not valuing, you know, not having our work valued, I think is central to this struggle that we're engaged in. So while we're fighting for justice, you know, to eradicate poverty, to eradicate these extremes of rich and poor, we're also fighting to be recognized as equals, to be recognized for our contributions.
Yes, I agree with that. I agree with that.
Please tell our audience how they can access your book and just, you know.
Oh, well, I'll tell you, I have a new book coming out, although I'm not sure yet when it's coming out. It's an e-book on Occupy. It's called Occupy This.
Fabulous.
And it's going to be for sale for $2.99 online. It's a 50-page book. The book's written. It's just being edited now. So many of the elements of transforming power are now present in the Occupy movement. So I propose to my publisher that I write a small sort of e-book as a kind of appendix, if you want, to transforming power on Occupy. So it'll be coming out hopefully at the beginning of January. It'll be, you know, available on rabble.ca, but also probably on transformingpower.ca.
Thank you so much for being with us. You are someone who has seen the feminist movement, you know, go through different stages. What excites you about where we are today?
Well, what excites me is that I feel, for the first time since the 80s in Canada, we have a real movement. But for the last 20 years, we've had what I call the NGOsification of the movements. That is, we have organizations that fight for demands, but we don't have any real movement. You know, all the discussion is on policy, not on how to organize people, right? And now we've got a real movement that's going out into the world and organizing at a grassroots level. I mean, I don't know about across the country, but like here, one of the things that the Occupy people are doing, they're Occupy the TTC, which is our transit system. And, you know, they're going into subways and streetcars and holding GAs with the passengers. And it's just great, you know, talking to ordinary people, right? And really trying to organize ordinary people, which I haven't seen in so long. And so I think that for so long we've been talking to each other as activists and not talking to ordinary people and getting ordinary people excited and believing that change was possible. So I'm really excited about that, and I see lots and lots of young women playing major roles in that. Not enough yet. It's still too male-dominated, but it is changing. And I think the whole spirit of the movement comes out of the feminist movement. That is, you know, it's horizontal, it's, you know, the idea of consensus. All of these kinds of things really was pioneered by the women's movement. So I think in many ways you see the impact of the women's movement not only in the role of young women, but in the processes, which are very anti-patriarchal. My view is the failure of second wave feminism is that we stopped taking on patriarchy. We basically got co-opted into patriarchy, into making more space for women in the patriarchy. And I think that the potential now is to actually transform patriarchy to get rid of it, and to get rid of this notion that if I have more power over you, that is, if I have more money than you, or more social power than you, or more positional power, I'm your boss, or that I can order you around and tell you what to do. You know, Ursula Franklin says, patriarchy, the best description of patriarchy is, do what I say or else. And getting rid of that kind of relationship of power, which is so corruptive and so oppressive to women, I think that's the potential of Occupy. And that's what the no leaders mean. I mean, there's not really no leaders. There's multiple leaders. But that's what it means, is that there's nobody who's going to take charge of this and tell us what to do. And I think that's a wonderful thing. And I experienced it the day that Occupy Toronto was evicted, is that the behavior of the of the people in the camp was astonishing. I mean, there was no visible leaders. It was like a group making decisions. It was the most incredible thing I've ever seen. And I think that that's what's exciting me, is this new way of operating and working with each other, which I think is very feminist, and comes out of the ideas that we had in the second wave of feminism, but that we were never fully able to put into practice. Is that clear?
Beautiful. That was beautifully said. Thank you so much for being with us.
Thank you again for being with us. Good talking to you, Sylvie. Take care.
Take care. Bye.
Okay, bye-bye.
That was Dr. Judy Rebick, and you heard it here, folks. There is a new book coming out, Occupy This. Should be available very soon.
Cambia lo superficial.
We have come to the end of our show, Latin Waves. Latin Waves is a weekly syndicated program produced and broadcast from the studios of CGSF Radio in Burnaby, BC. The program is available free of charge to campus and community stations across Canada and the U.S. For more information about our work or to support our efforts, please visit our website at www.latinwavesmedia.com. Bye for now.